Državni izpitni center.
Maturità generale 2010.
Prova d'ascolto.
A tutti voi un cordiale saluto. Siamo all'inizio della prova d'ascolto d'inglese.
Questa prova d'esame si compone di due parti, la parte A e la parte B. Per ciascuna parte ascolterete un testo e risponderete poi ad un esercizio che a esso si ricollega. Dapprima leggerete l'esercizio, poi ascolterete ciascun testo per due volte. Potrete cominciare a risolvere l'esercizio già durante l'ascolto. L'inizio e la fine del testo saranno indicati dal seguente segnale acustico.
Scrivete le vostre risposte negli spazi appositamente previsti all'interno della prova, utilizzando la penna stilografica o la penna sfera. Scrivete in modo leggibile. In caso di errore, tracciate un segno sulla risposta scorretta e scrivete accanto ad essa quella corretta. Alle risposte e alle correzioni scritte in modo illeggibile verrà assegnato il punteggio di 0.
Dopo aver completato la risoluzione di ambedue le parti A e B della prova, avrete a disposizione ancora un minuto per compilare il foglio per le risposte per quanto riguarda l'esercizio A. Ricordatevi di indicare solamente una scelta per ciascuna affermazione dell'esercizio. In presenza di più scelte, infatti, alla vostra risposta verrà assegnato il punteggio di 0.
Abbiate fiducia in voi stessi e nelle vostre capacità. Vi auguriamo buon lavoro.
Ascoltate con attenzione. Aprite la prova d'esame.
Section A. You're going to hear a recording about vampire bats. As you listen to the recording, tick the appropriate column below, then complete the answer sheet according to the instructions on it. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the statements.
Being attacked accidentally is one thing, but in the name of science, zoologist Mark Ferns is putting himself at risk deliberately.
I haven't even left home yet, and already I'm losing blood. I'm getting pills for malaria, jabs for yellow fever and rabies. I feel like a walking pharmacy.
Working with scientists, Mark is making a special on the world's thirstiest bloodsucker, the legendary vampire bat. Bats are well known for feeding on livestock, but it's said that they even bite humans. Mark wants to be the first to capture this on film, even if he has to be the bait.
I was pretty keen on the film. I thought it had a lot of new science, and we found some stuff that nobody had ever filmed before, but I had to take a few deep breaths when it became clear that I was going to be the victim.
On a small Caribbean island, Mark and his team find a family who claim to have been bitten by bats. They bear telltale scars, apparently left by the bats' razor-sharp front teeth.
They had had chickens and goats on this island, and all their livestock had been killed in a major cyclone the year before. And so probably what had happened over a year or two, the bats had really shifted their diet to the point that by the time we got there, people were their number one food source.
If the bats really are feeding on people, Mark and the crew want to be the first to capture it on film to help us better understand their biting behavior. They set up in the dark and wait for the bats to move in. But after 3 nights of waiting, there's been no bite.
Listo, Hector?
If Mark wants to get the shots, he has no choice. He must offer himself as the victim.
What I've got to do now is to pretend to be asleep as best I can. The bats are really nervous. I must admit I'm feeling a little nervous myself, but I've got to convince them if they're going to fly down and bite me. It's going to be a long night.
To my knowledge, nobody's deliberately been bitten before. And so there's that weighing up of the pressure of needing to get the material, do I really want to do this? What's it going to be like?
Mark's about to find out. He sits perfectly still as the bats draw near.
We actually had some bats land underneath the chair, and that was the moment of real sort of tension for me. Are they going to climb up my leg? Am I going to lie here and maybe they'll want to climb up to the neck? You know, those ideas about real vampires.
As Mark's imagination runs wild, the vampire strikes.
Ah! And then all of a sudden, ouch, was a really sharp pain right on the end of the finger. And there was quite a chunk of flesh missing from the tip of the finger that had actually taken not just the skin, but a chunk of the flesh under, pouring with blood. But as soon as I lay back down and the blood was dripping from the finger, within minutes they were back, starting to lap the blood.
But the worst is yet to come.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Being attacked accidentally is one thing, but in the name of science, zoologist Mark Ferns is putting himself at risk deliberately.
I haven't even left home yet, and already I'm losing blood. I'm getting pills for malaria, jabs for yellow fever and rabies. I feel like a walking pharmacy.
Working with scientists, Mark is making a special on the world's thirstiest bloodsucker, the legendary vampire bat. Bats are well known for feeding on livestock, but it's said that they even bite humans. Mark wants to be the first to capture this on film, even if he has to be the bait.
I was pretty keen on the film. I thought it had a lot of new science and we found some stuff that nobody had ever filmed before, but I had to take a few deep breaths when it became clear that I was going to be the victim.
On a small Caribbean island, Mark and his team find a family who claim to have been bitten by bats. They bear telltale scars, apparently left by the bats' razor-sharp front teeth.
They had chickens and goats on this island, and all their livestock had been killed in a major cyclone the year before. And so probably what had happened over a year or two, the bats had really shifted their diet to the point that by the time we got there, people were their number one food source.
If the bats really are feeding on people, Mark and the crew want to be the first to capture it on film to help us better understand their biting behavior. They set up in the dark and wait for the bats to move in. But after 3 nights of waiting, there's been no bite.
Listo, Hector?
If Mark wants to get the shots, he has no choice. He must offer himself as the victim.
What I've got to do now is to pretend to be asleep as best I can. The bats are really nervous. I must admit I'm feeling a little nervous myself, but I've got to convince them if they're going to fly down and bite me. It's going to be a long night.
To my knowledge, nobody's deliberately been bitten before. And so there's that weighing up of the pressure of needing to get the material, do I really want to do this? What's it going to be like?
Mark's about to find out. He sits perfectly still as the bats draw near.
We actually had some bats land underneath the chair, and that was the moment of real sort of tension for me. Are they going to climb up my leg? Am I going to lie here and maybe they'll want to climb up to the neck? You know, those ideas about real vampires.
As Mark's imagination runs wild, the vampire strikes.
Ah! And then all of a sudden, ouch. It was a really sharp pain right on the end of the finger, and there was quite a chunk of flesh missing from the tip of the finger that had actually taken not just the skin, but a chunk of the flesh under, pouring with blood. But as soon as I lay back down and the blood was dripping from the finger, within minutes they were back, starting to lap the blood.
But the worst is yet to come.
This is the end of Section A. Section B.
You're going to hear a program about sleeping disorders.
As you listen to the recording, write your answers in note form in the spaces below.
Use 1 to 5 words for each answer.
You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the questions.
Michael Horseman has no problem getting to sleep. He just can't stay in bed. Michael has another type of parasomnia. He's a chronic sleepwalker.
When I was about 7 or 8, I would come down the stairs, walk down my parents' hallway, stand in the doorway, and sometimes just stand there. Other times I would go in the kitchen, get a drink. Just little things like that, or I would just wake up and then have no idea how I got up.
Most sleepwalkers outgrow the condition by adolescence. Mike, however, did not. As he grew older, his sleepwalking episodes only got worse.
The episodes kind of got worse. I would just bolt downstairs, like screaming or yelling or something. At one point, it got so bad where I ripped my closet door off the wall, shattered the light bulb inside the closet, and left the closet door on the floor. Then woke up the next morning and had no idea what happened. My mom actually became scared because I'm a little bigger than her.
One of the last episodes, he bolted out of bed and appeared right next to me at my bed, stating he didn't like snakes and that I had lied to him. And he had such a look in his eye. I was afraid. I'd never seen that look before. So he went back to bed and before I went back to bed, I hid all the sharp knives in the kitchen because it was a different look in his eye. And we had never seen that before.
They took Mike to Dr. Judith Owens at the Hasbro Children's Hospital Sleep Clinic. Dr. Owens is an expert in parasomnias like sleepwalking and night terrors.
It's almost as though the individual is caught between being in a very deep stage of sleep and going on to a lighter stage of sleep or even being awake. So the behavior is characterized by both sleeping and waking features. The brain is essentially asleep, but the individual behaves as though they're awake in some ways.
Dr. Owens insisted that Mike keep a sleep diary, charting when he went to bed, when he awoke, and anything that happened in between. After 2 weeks, this simple log helped Owens determine the cause of the sleepwalking.
What we discovered was that he really was very sleep deprived. He was not getting enough sleep on a consistent basis, as is true with many teenagers, unfortunately. And we felt that that was really probably the major contributing factor. He was also drinking a huge amount of caffeinated beverages during the day as well, which we thought was probably contributing to his difficulty falling asleep.
Sleepwalking can be triggered by fever, anxiety, or in this case, sleep deprivation. For Michael, the treatment was simple, a caffeine boycott and a good night's sleep. The results were almost immediate.
We were surprised that it happened so fast. But just by him changing a few habits, he stayed in bed.
Exactly. We were very relieved that he didn't have to go on any medication, that what they recommended the first time worked.
For Mike, his sleep is finally what it was always meant to be, restful, plentiful, and thankfully, travel-free.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Michael Horseman has no problem getting to sleep. He just can't stay in bed. Michael has another type of parasomnia. He's a chronic sleepwalker.
When I was about 7 or 8, I would come down the stairs, walk down my parents' hallway, stand in the doorway, and sometimes just stand there. Other times I would go in the kitchen, get a drink. Just little things like that, or I would just wake up and then have no idea how I got up.
Most sleepwalkers outgrow the condition by adolescence. Mike, however, did not. As he grew older, his sleepwalking episodes only got worse.
The episodes kind of got worse. I would just bolt downstairs, like screaming or yelling or something. At one point, it got so bad where I ripped my closet door off the wall, shattered the light bulb inside the closet, and left the closet door on the floor. Then woke up the next morning and had no idea what happened. My mom actually became scared because I'm a little bigger than her.
One of the last episodes, he bolted out of bed and appeared right next to me at my bed, stating he didn't like snakes and that I had lied to him. And he had such a look in his eye. I was afraid. I'd never seen that look before. So he went back to bed, and before I went back to bed, I hid all the sharp knives in the kitchen, because it was a different look in his eye, and we had never seen that before.
They took Mike to Dr. Judith Owens at the Hasbro Children's Hospital Sleep Clinic. Dr. Owens is an expert in parasomnias like sleepwalking and night terrors.
It's almost as though the individual is caught between being in a very deep stage of sleep and going on to a lighter stage of sleep or even being awake. So the behavior is characterized by both sleeping and waking features. The brain is essentially asleep, but the individual behaves as though they're awake in some ways.
Dr. Owens insisted that Mike keep a sleep diary, charting when he went to bed, when he awoke, and anything that happened in between. After 2 weeks, this simple log helped Owens determine the cause of the sleepwalking.
What we discovered was that he really was very sleep-deprived. He was not getting enough sleep on a consistent basis, as is true with many teenagers, unfortunately. And we felt that that was really probably the major contributing factor. He was also drinking a huge amount of caffeinated beverages during the day as well, which we thought was probably contributing to his difficulty falling asleep.
Sleepwalking can be triggered by fever, anxiety, or in this case, sleep deprivation. For Michael, the treatment was simple, a caffeine boycott and a good night's sleep. The results were almost immediate.
We were surprised that it happened so fast. But just by him changing a few habits, he stayed in bed.
Exactly. We were very relieved that he didn't have to go on any medication, that what they recommended the first time worked.
For Mike, his sleep is finally what it was always meant to be, restful, plentiful, and thankfully, travel-free.
This is the end of Section B.
Ora avete a disposizione un minuto per compilare il foglio per le risposte per quanto riguarda l'esercizio A.
Siamo alla conclusione della prova d'ascolto d'inglese. Smettete di scrivere, chiudete la prova d'esame e posatela sull'orlo del banco insieme al foglio per le risposte.
Ancora un cordiale saluto.